last week we saw the Bushfire Royal Commission release its report. One of the recommendations from the Royal Commissioner was that they thought it was important that the community education and guidance on the dangers of smoke was more consistent nationally, so that we all agree to what is a dangerous level of smoke pollution. The estimates were during that Royal Commission that over 400 people died as a result of smoke. Now, they're not figures you'd probably notice in the fire toll, but they might be in associated conditions. And now, there is no one better to ask about these things than my next guest, Faye Johnston. She's a global authority on health effects of bushfire smoke and the lead author of the University of Tasmania study on smoke-related impacts of the most recent fire season. Faye, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
That seems like a simple recommendation and comment, but it's not really, is it?
No, that's right, which is why I actually think they've done a great job, and their recommendations are community-wide education is a great one, because there's a lot to learn and understand about smoke. And their recommendation for consistency is also fantastic, because during last summer we had some states declaring it hazardous at a concentration over 24-hour averages of 50, and other states waiting for it to get to either 177 or 250 before declaring it hazardous. And we had some states just giving nearer real-time information, hourly averages, which is actually a lot more useful if you're trying to plan your day, and others that were giving the 24-hour averages. So there was two issues. One was the averaging period, and one was how high it had to go before they gave the most extreme warning about it. And so the recommendations are fantastic, and I'm aware that there's been a fantastic response. And in fact, I think we will see something a lot more consistent with the season coming up.
Faye, interestingly though, and having spoken to you earlier, you mentioned that when we talk about those dangerous levels though, it's not true for everybody.
Correct. Oops. And this is the thing about smoke. The main thing that makes you unwell in smoke is the suspended particles in the air. So it's the concentration, PM stands for particulate matter, you might see that. But so the concentration of particles in the air drives the health effects. But particles aren't like a toxin, like cyanide or like, you know, Panadol, where you know very clearly what concentration will start having effects on the human body. And basically, with variation, it will affect most people similarly. When it comes to particles, it's not a direct toxic effect. In that way, what particles do is set off your immune system. Your body will recognize an injury, a foreign presence. It will react. It will make inflammation. The heart will go into a more stressed rhythm. Your blood will be more likely to clot. A perfectly natural, healthy response for a lot of insults and injuries. But if you've got severe heart disease, for example, or if you've got lung disease, these tiny changes that are normal in your immune system can just precipitate something serious, like a heart attack, like cardiac arrest, like a severe asthma attack. So in people in these high-risk groups, you actually don't need much of a rise above background to precipitate illness, but it does, of course, go up. The higher the smoke, the greater that is. If you're not in a high-risk group, you can actually tolerate quite a lot of it, and you don't need to be too alarmed. So, and that's a big problem in trying to get a national consistency.
Well, indeed, because I'm guessing then that those trigger levels of smoke are going to be much lower for people in that high-risk group. And for different conditions. So at what point do we say it's dangerous?
Yes. So what's dangerous for someone in a high-risk group and what's dangerous for me can be a long, long way apart. We know there's no safe lower limit. So as soon as you start getting incremental rises above usual background, you'll be able to measure health effects in terms of admissions to hospital or even deaths. It's quite rare at a population level, because not everyone in the population's at high risk. But the more people affected, the more likely you are to see health effects. So interestingly, with the big event we had last summer, we estimated over 400 deaths, but more than 300 of them weren't on extreme hazardous days. They were on the much lower days, that happened for many, many more days and affected many, many more people. So it was the whole footprint of the smoke over millions of people having an even bigger effect than the really extreme days that some communities suffered during that time.
And that's what I was going to bring into it, because, I mean, last summer was kind of out of the box, wasn't it? I remember being in Melbourne during some of those very smoke-filled days of the fires near there. And even here in Adelaide, we were impacted by the Kangaroo Island fires for several days. I'm just wondering about the cumulative effect of smoke. If we're talking about danger, if you have an intensely smoky day one day, is that, how do we compare the danger of, say, that to 4, 5, 6 days, maybe even months, we could say, in some communities in a row of experiencing smoke?
Yep, that's an excellent question. And there's a lot of research going on around that. What I can tell you is the longer it goes on for, the worse it is. And if you compare, for example, daily fluctuations and yearly fluctuations in average particles in the air, if you have a rise, even a modest rise of, say, 10, the effects, if that's sustained over a whole year, is about 10 times higher than just adding up the daily effect. So if you're constantly got smoke in the air, you're constantly having a stress response to it, it actually starts making you sicker. It's a risk factor for heart disease and a risk factor for lung disease. So that's comparing a day to a year.
Yeah.
Comparing like one terrible day to 7 moderate days or 10 moderate days, it's probably similar. Like 10 above background for 10 days in a row, is probably, which you might not notice, it wouldn't register as anything particular on the national scales. But it's fairly certainly, the evidence is that one day 100 times higher is very similar to 10 days 10 times higher in terms of community impacts. And chronic air pollution, yeah, we've got to pay attention to, even if it's not extreme.
And this is my point, though, that, you know, on day one of that 10-day cumulative period, if we had a national scheme and said that at this level we throw in the warnings, it may not have registered a warning on day one, but after 10 days of it, It's a high risk, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, it's an equivalent risk to what you might have given a warning for if it was
exactly,
you know, at a level of 100 on day one. Yeah, that's
and
correct.
So there's the complexity of it. I mean, a scale then or a national warning system like that is going to be difficult. It just requires daily advice from the sounds of it.
Yes. So I think what I personally think needs happening is that we need daily information on hourly fluctuations that's available to everyone. We need good community education so people in different high-risk groups know where they fit and where they stand and how to respond. And when it goes on for more than a day or so, that's when government public health agencies really need to come in with the expert advice, because you can't expect people to know how long is too long and what about places affected by wood smoke all through winter every year. In Tasmania, we have that situation, and that actually causes a lot more hospital admissions and deaths than our burn-offs that we get. You know, we get planned burns every year, we get severe bushfires every so often. But the much lower wood smoke has a much bigger effect.
I'm talking here on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill with Faye Johnston, who is the lead author of a study from the University of Tasmania on the smoke-related impacts of the most recent fire season. Smoke is a danger, but what we're trying to work out and what the complexity is how much smoke is how dangerous. I also just going back to the health, you mentioned the vulnerable people who have identified health risks, but could extended exposure to smoke of whatever kind actually trigger those conditions, those heart conditions that you may, in a perfectly healthy person originally, Faye? Or will it just exacerbate it in people who are already suffering from those conditions?
If people who live in parts of the world where air pollution is higher than in parts of the world where air pollution is lower, the communities with the higher background averages have higher rates of heart disease, of asthma, of diabetes. So constant exposure it's one more risk factor, but it's complicated. It's not a simple, you know, it's like diet, exercise, nutrition, background air pollution. These are all risk factors and they all work together with your genetic makeup. So, like I said, it's not like a poison and this will definitely happen to you. But if you're in a place with higher air pollution, then you need to know that's one more risk factor. And if you've got a family history of heart disease, and if your cholesterol's not good and your blood pressure's not good, you would be paying a lot more attention to that air pollution than if you were otherwise totally healthy with no risk factors.
Yeah. And what about the recommended advice? I mean, on days of high smoke or pollution in that sense, people are often said to stay in the house, close your windows and doors, and protect yourself that way. Is that offering you legitimate protection?
Again, the answer is it depends, because it's complex. So, look, we're always going to have smoke. Australia's vegetation burns. We need to burn to reduce our fuel loads. It's an exposure none of us can avoid. We just need to get good at managing it. And for a lot of the common exposures, like burn-offs, for example, and I heard you say you're experiencing something of that nature in Adelaide today, but and where the smoke might increase for a few hours and then go away, then closing your doors and windows is a really good move, because it delays the entry into the house. So you will be protected inside compared with outside. For really severe events or chronic pollution that goes on for months, it's a lot harder, because the fine particles in the smoke actually behave a bit like a gas. It's hard to get a hermetically sealed house, especially in Australia, where we're not famous for really well-sealed, you know, nicely insulated houses. So when it goes on for a long time, you will get quite a build-up indoors, just a delay by a day or so for it to get in. And then it might even get trapped in if the smoke outside goes away. You need to ventilate. So in those circumstances, you really need to try and get to a building or a place where there's air conditioning, because modern air conditioning systems do filter, you know, shopping centres or office blocks, or a little portable air filter, a HEPA filter. You can make your own clean air shelter in your own house in a single room. That's a place to go to refuge or watch telly, or that would be the future of managing really severe prolonged events, because we are going to see more of those.
Just going back to your earlier comment, though, about heating and combustion heaters and smoke-fired heaters, those sorts of things, what's the associated risk with those, of people using those on a daily basis during winter?
So it all depends on where you are. And if you're in a valley with a lot of people in it, then wood heaters do punch above their weight when it comes to making air pollution. So I guess a good example of this is Sydney. It's probably 6 or 7% of households might heat with a wood heater, and, you know, 93% don't. Yet that is the dominant source of air pollution in Sydney in winter. There are more deaths due to wood heater smoke in Sydney than there are to traffic, when nearly everyone will have a car or two. So that's just an indication of how much pollution pumps out of some chimneys. Not every chimney. It's just really hard to get an efficient combustion system in a wood heater. So they're a major source, and if there's a lot of people heating, or even as in Sydney, a few people, it is going to have a measurable effect on air quality, and therefore a measurable effect on health. Mm. If you're in the countryside, then there's no people around and you get good wind and good dispersal, it's much less of an issue.
Good to talk with you, Faye. As always, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Faye Johnston, she is the Global Authority on Health Effects of Bushfire Smoke, and the lead author of the University of Tasmania study on smoke-related impacts in that most recent fire season.